Forum tonight asks the question, is the seminary a stranger in the church community? My name is Jackie Burlesman. I'm one of the teaching staff coordinators for the summer and the moderator for tonight. And my job is to make sure we begin and end on time and that nobody talks too much. And I first want to introduce everybody up here, and then I'll say a little bit about forums at Holden, and then we'll let them say a few things and then open it up to all of you. We have Os Matsutani over here, who is the board chair of Luther Seminary in St. Paul. Michael Pellet on my left here is currently a pastor and a professor of philosophy, hermeneutics, and philosophical theology at St. Thomas More College at the University of Saskatoon in Canada. He's our foreign person here. And he's a
stranger.
And he's also taught at a seminary. And he's here on teaching staff and also a board member of the Holden Board. And Barbara Rossing is when and here. She's a New Testament scholar and seminary professor at Lutheran School of Theology in Chicago. She's also an ordained pastor and here on teaching staff. And Dave Hahn on the end over here is a recent graduate of Luther Seminary with a call to a congregation in Arizona, right?
I don't have a call yet. Oh. I'll be interviewing when I go home.
Okay. And he's here on volunteer staff right now. And Jan Nairn is currently a student at Luther Seminary in St. Paul, doing her one-year internship in Longview, Washington. So she represents somebody who's still in the seminary and also another career track person. And then Tom Witt.
Layperson.
Representing all of the labor. Gifted musician, active layperson, non-ordained, with lots of contact with a lot of congregations. So, before I give each of them a chance to speak, I'll just say a word about forums. My job is, like I said, to make sure we all end at time, and we'll officially end the conversation at 9:30. Many of these forums continue on into the evening, into the jacuzzi or the sauna or wherever, which is fine. I like to think that Holden tries to create a really safe place to express one's ideas and opinions on a topic. So we try to practice good manners, as Ingrid Christiansen has mentored me in the forum moderator role, which means we take turns and we respect one another's opinions, and we like to think that many voices are good. And I like to think Holden's a place we can honestly talk about the issues that are near and dear to us that we often can't do, like in our churches, in our relationships, in our homes, communities, whatever. And each of us brings our best thinking here to the discussion, and no one voice is really more important than another. And we can all together make each other wise. We'll disagree, and if you hear something you disagree with, that's great. The wonderful things about forums are that we don't have to come to a decision or a consensus. So we can just keep talking, and we only need to listen and enjoy the conversation and struggle together as Christian people around the issue at hand. And I like to say that, you know, remember we're all Holden. There's like no official position on this question. So we're all part of what comes out of tonight. So in a spirit of grace, let's begin hierarchically, maybe, with Os.
The shortest.
No, I don't think so.
No!
The next shortest.
Yeah, I'm Os Matsutani. I live in Anchorage, Alaska. I've been on the Luther Seminary board for about 9 years, and the way the seminary board of directors were established, it was with the Western region, regions 1, 2, and 3. Alaska had a representative to be sent. The way I got to know David Titi is that he's the godfather of our children, and we have a, his roommate is the godfather of our children, and he was, the oldest communities in Alaska are actually with the Seward Peninsula, which are the Eskimo people, and in order for the Eskimo people to learn how to herd the reindeers, they brought Laplanders over. The Laplanders brought their preachers over, who became ALC, then who became ELCA. And then we sent interns up there and people from Luther Seminary go up there, and they're mentors, and they go up there and they sort of deal with all this. And David happened to come by the house. And he was chairman of the New Testament department. Then he became a president of the seminary, and he called me up and asked me if I would be on the board. So that's how that connection. It's been a fascinating and interesting experience, especially with the joining of the church. And when we talk, and the biggest issue now that we're dealing with is what we call clustering, the way the church will go ahead and fund the seminaries. Basically, are three clusters, and we're in what we call the Western Mission Cluster. The crisis that it really has occurred with seminaries, obviously, as with everything, money, right? And we were a kept organization at one time. The church gave us money, and so we didn't have to respond to anything, and we went ahead merrily on our way. With the decrease in the funding, with having to then again begin the process of having to sort of make it on our own, we had to start asking ourselves questions. Who is our customer? What are we doing? Can we keep doing the kinds of things that we're doing? We had a whole curriculum revision. We went out to the congregations and asked the congregations, what is it that you need in a pastor? We looked at the demographics of the Lutheran congregations, anticipated, you know, in 10 years, 50% of the people will probably have not grown up in two-parent families. We're having a whole change in the demographics of Lutheran congregations. And they also said they wanted preachers who can walk the walk, right, and also talk the talk. And so we had a whole curriculum revision, and we went ahead, and of course they wanted to have the biblical scholarly part of it too. They wanted to have contextual activity, and then they wanted to have what we call discipleship. There was some difficulty initially with this whole issue, because I think culturally speaking there was the piety that had occurred. Some people were reacting against that piety, but so we named it discipleship, and really talking about spirituality. And the professors are having marked difficulty in grading people now, because it's not academic, and there are contextual kinds of ways, and you know, we figured, you know, it's all changing. It's the same thing that we've had to deal with in medicine. I'm a physician, and we've had to go through these kinds of things in medicine too. And we're beginning to see ourselves as consultants. I used to be trained to be responsible for your health. Now, and you know, that's sort of absurd, right? I mean, that's sort of stupid that I can't be responsible for your health. You have to be responsible for your health. I'm going to be a consultant for you. And I believe that that's where we're going in seminary education as well. From the seminary perspective to the congregations, we're going to become consultants. We have several roles. It's very complicated. We also have the role of training pastors, and also the MA program is just booming like crazy. And we're people are wanting to go into church work without having to be ordained. The forces here, we have about 150 children in the seminary now, and we have to hire a youth pastor now just for the seminarians' kids. The second career people are all coming in. We no longer just have housing for single people, we have housing for families. Everything is being in a big upheaval. I talked to Jim Boyce, and he told me last week when I was at the board meeting, he says, I'm tired of planning. I said, I'm tired of change. He says, all I want to do is try to get my class ready for next week. Can I just do that? I said, yeah, go ahead and do that, Jim. I just do that. It's just, but, you know, things are going to change, and times are changing, so we have to be able to address that. I think that's probably what I'll say.
Okay. Michael?
Okay. Three things. Maybe we'll throw out for you to think about, and if you want to talk about them some more, we can. The first thing I think is to remember it is the church who calls people into the ordained ministry. That means first and foremost, you take responsibility for that. It is you who should be tapping people on the shoulders or whatever, saying, I think you have the gifts, the talents, the abilities for this ordained ministry. The other side of that is that also recognizing that not everyone who thinks they have the gifts and talents for ministry is a minister. I mean, some folks have this sense of the internal call, a very subjective feeling, and I understand the internal call, and that's part of it. But if simply the call for ministry is that mere subjective feeling inside, I mean, how does one tell the difference between that call for ministry and a little indigestion after lentil loaf? I mean, there's a real problem with just simply subjectivity. And so we have to remember it's the church who calls. Secondly, I think that in our contemporary setting and culture, pastors undergo a terrific identity crisis. They don't know who they are because seemingly a ministry of word and sacrament is not considered enough. They need to be something else in order to be professionals. And so we try the whole managerial model of ministry and try to turn pastors into administrators of our plant and facilities and all that great stuff. Or we use the therapeutic model. And so then we kind of have the old joke, what's the difference between a pastor and a psychologist or psychiatrist? $120 an hour. Or now there's sometimes the new model of theologian in residence. And even there, I mean, there are many people in the congregation who might be, quite frankly, far better theologians than the pastor. But to remember that the pastoral call is a call to word and sacrament. The third thing is, I think we're still fighting within the ministry a notion of the Lone Ranger mentality, that somehow the pastor is understood as somehow with that flash of the red stole and the white alb and the hearty voice of the Lord be with you. And then you ask, who was that? That somehow, even in the sense of trying to build community and recognize the community of saints through seminary education, there's still that Lone Ranger mentality that as the pastors are out there, they think they're always going it alone in their own particular congregations. So can think about those things. The church calls. What's the identity of pastoral ministry, and how do we stop being lone rangers?
Perfect.
Barb,
right on time.
Sort of several miscellaneous thoughts in no particular order. I myself did not go to a Lutheran seminary to become a pastor. I went to Yale Divinity School, and that also was a model for how pastors are formed, Lutheran pastors and all other denominations as well. There are a number of divinity schools attached to universities, and I'm doing my doctoral work at Harvard Divinity School, same kind of thing. The University of Chicago and other universities have divinity schools as well, and that's a wonderful setting too. The question, is the seminary a stranger in the church, is one. I agree with Ose that funding has something to do with that. Other denominations Presbyterians, Methodists, Congregational, to service in Roman Catholics, have more freestanding seminaries that are on their own as far as funding. And that has not traditionally been the Lutheran model. As Ulf said, historically Lutherans have supported the seminaries, and they've really been tied into the church. We have, however, at Lutheran seminaries in the last 10 years seen a precipitous decline in funding from, at my school, I think 10 years ago, some 70% of its budget came from national and synod church sources, and the goal is to get it, well, now we're down, well, the goal is to stabilize for the seminaries around 30%, isn't it, from national and synod, which one has to ask, at what point do seminaries then become freestanding or strangers, if that's how low the church's investment is in the school, and it's an important question. And I don't think we want to become freestanding seminaries. I should hasten to say that. I think that we really want to stay tied into the church and stay connected to synods and the national church. And the goal is to figure out how to do that in creative ways as funding patterns really change. As far as students, well, I guess what I want to say to all of you is I hope that if you're interested in attending seminary, that you do follow up on that. Because I think a theological education is a great thing to have, even if you're not interested in becoming a pastor or a certified lay professional. There's probably a seminary in your area that you could get to. More and more, we teach courses at night. We teach extension courses. We've got one satellite campus that we have that's 40 miles from our regular site out in St. Charles, a suburb of Chicago. Most seminaries are like that. They're eager to have lay people taking courses, either for credit or auditing. I had one course last fall that I taught at one of our satellite sites where about half the students were non-traditional and about half of them were auditors, but it was really exciting. That was one of my favorite courses, and I love getting out into the community. I think the seminaries in your area are probably doing that so that you can take courses too. But for students who are thinking of becoming pastors, the key is to get really good ones to consider that, because we can only do so much at the seminary. It is really fun teaching students, but they're not going to have a personality change while they're at school, and they're not going to become something else. So if you're, I don't know if you're here because you're disgruntled with your pastor or whatever else, we would like to have really good students to work with. And the key is as Michael said, for you to help identify those and send them to us. And they are a delight. I mean, we are overall really excited about our students. Part of the question of, I think one of the topics that's going to come up tonight is sort of how to weed out, how to weed out the eight balls, let's call it that. And there's a joint responsibility that is sort of partly lodged with the seminaries, but largely now in the Lutheran structure, lodged with synod candidacy committees. It's sort of a new element of the bureaucracy. And maybe some of you are on your synodical candidacy committee. Are any of you? Okay, that's a very Lutheran thing, I know. Todd's reminding me. But anyway, it's not only, I think we have to really grapple with this. I think about that issue a lot because sometimes I think, to tell you the truth, that if I were to go to seminary now, I'm not sure I would make it through the system. There are a lot of hoops for our students to go to. We're really working to assess people at every level to the point that, if any of you in this room are pastors, I'm sure you wonder too whether you can make it through the current system. It's a very rigorous process, and it's more rigorous than it was when I went to school as far as the amount of assessment steps that students have to go through. It's daunting. I think it's necessary because ministry has changed, but it is a pretty rigorous process right now, and I tell the students every year when they graduate that I'm very proud of them and impressed with their diligence in pursuing this vocation. That's enough.
Okay.
That's kind of a good lead-in, I think. My name is David Hahn. I just graduated this last May from Luther Seminary. That's a good lead-in, Barb. I'm going to be a little vulnerable here because the process, I had a difficult time, actually. The second part of the process, it's called, the second part that we have to go through is an endorsement committee, CIPI 4, an endorsement committee. And it was at the time, it's changed now, it was at the end of our first year. And I went in and sat and talked to the committee. And then they asked me to leave, and I failed for a long time, and then I came back in. And the chairperson said, a couple of us, you know, want to deny you and think that you should go away for a couple of years. And for myself, I had started for me as an internal call. It was confirmed externally as I had the opportunity to work in churches. But at this point, you know, early on, I heard this call, and I knew, I had this strong sense that I was to be a pastor, and it was extremely difficult when I was confronted with this. What was I going to do? And at the time, that first year for me, it was difficult to understand theological education in terms of its practical use. I mean, what use is a parishioner, you know, creation in the triune God? You know, how is this going to help somebody who's dying? You know, it didn't compute to me. And when I was confronted with this sense of integrating what I was learning theologically into my faith, this is one of the questions that they had for myself. I felt challenged in that sense to grow. That summer, I took work leading worship services, three worship services a Sunday. And so I was preaching constantly. And so I had the opportunity to begin integrating what I was learning theologically, practically into saying, you know, into preaching. And that was a great way for me to begin to articulate what I was learning theologically, practically. And I think for me, this is probably one of the major things that I've learned in seminary, is to critically think theologically and biblically. This is probably one of the greatest things that I feel that I come away from seminary with, the ability to do that on my own. That's one of the greatest things that I really feel that I come away from seminary with. So yeah, Barb, it can be really difficult, but that forced me to look at the true sense and the importance of theological education. It was really a wake-up call, because I think a lot of people, at least for me, I came right out of college. And like Os was saying, we have a lot of second career people. But myself, you come right out of college, and you know, I wasn't taking it as seriously as I should. And for me, I was excited that I had that opportunity. I can say that now, because it was a wake-up call for me. And then that's, again, I say that's one of the greatest things that I feel that I've learned, to reflect theologically and biblically.
Dan.
Well, if I've understood something of what we're supposed to be discussing tonight here, being the authentic interface between the congregation and the seminary, I'm probably the person here who's most in the position to be at that interface, because I'm in the middle of my seminary education and I'm in a congregation and I'm here with them. So having said that, I feel I don't have a great deal that's very profound to say. I've been reminded this year of that saying that if you think everything is going okay, you don't understand what's happening. And I've been wondering what I'm missing. And don't fill me in right now, Igor. but essentially, it's been a wonderful experience, I'll just say that. There have been things that I don't feel I was prepared for in my seminary education so far, but when I think about them, I don't know how I could have been prepared for them. There are also things during my seminary time that I have wished I could be doing or doing more of. But when I think about the things I have been doing, With a few exceptions, I can't think of what I wouldn't have wanted to do. So, you know, it's hard to think what could have been excluded in order to do these other things that I very much wanted to do. I do represent the other half. Approximately 50% of our seminaries now are women, and approximately 50% of our seminaries are what they call, euphemistically for some of us, second career students. I'm actually third or fourth. I refuse to count. Anyway, and probably if you saw that on a quadrant, women of my age are probably, you know, there's a larger group of women my age. I haven't expressed that very well, but there's many, yes, many women of middle and later years are at the seminary, so there's probably more women in that older group than there are women in the younger group. That's what I think I'm trying to say. So I do represent that area of experience. Being there, I think there are many ways in which the seminary has yet to adjust to us, and many ways in which the seminaries will be able, as the years go on, to take advantage of the full potential that we represent. But, you know, that's going to be a bit of a transition that still has to come. That's essentially it.
Great. Tom.
Okay.
Token laborers.
Token laborers.
Well,
I'm throwing out some ideas as someone who works in the church, who intentionally chose not to go to seminary, but perhaps received a more informal theological education by living at Holy Village for 3.5 years.
That's right.
And also now, having lived in intentional Christian community for some 13 years, I'm also a musician and a worship leader, so many of my passions are maybe more in that area, because not only because that's the area I work in, but I see that as the area in need of the most training. So when I approach this question of about seminaries is, what do we need seminaries to be doing from the standpoint of a lay person? I think that preaching is a real need to strengthen. Just from my experience of being around the church, not only in my own congregation, but traveling around the country doing music, I think pastors in training need to learn to spend considerable time both alone and in their community grappling with God's word for us, and need to communicate that to us and discuss that with us and enrich us with that grappling. So that's my first comment. I think secondly, related to that, would be to spend considerable more time understanding the holy drama of worship and liturgy, which I find to be quite appalling when I go around the church, the lack of understanding of worship and liturgy, and its power to transform, rather than continuing to perpetuate what I think many of us feel, I guess I shouldn't talk for other people, what I feel is an understanding of liturgy as simply preserving something from the past, rather than liturgy as being about transforming the world, which I think is the purpose of liturgy. I guess you talked about that a little bit in your Bible study, I mean, liturgy as radical transformation of or counterculture. Mary and I, when we go out doing music, we see lots of seminary-trained pastors who either A, have no desire to work at worship, or B, have no time to work at worship, or C, have no idea about what worship is themselves, much less the ability to pass that knowledge on to their parishioners. And that's sad. So I would ask for that to happen in seminaries more than it does. Secondly, I think seminaries need to be training other kinds of leaders in the church. And some of you have mentioned this about lay people going to seminary, but seminaries need to have some sort of leadership development component where we teach people, both lay and clergy, how to effectively lead. Some of my most frustrating meetings have been in churches where people do not know how to lead meetings, they don't know how to articulate a vision, they don't know how to sustain a ministry. And I think the seminary needs to be teaching that. And I think that's learned. Obviously, certain people have gifts in doing that, but I think it also can be learned. I'll keep it at that. And then lastly, I want to share a pipe dream that I've had for a long time. As someone who works on the edge of the church, and I'll just name it the left end of the church, in justice concerns, I've had this idea that, and this is in the ELCA, Lutheran Church, but my idea is that the ELCA has 8 seminaries, and I would say all of us to the left of center who have been quite annoying to the church by lobbying and protesting and gathering all sorts of amendments and resolutions, we would agree to stop all of that irritating activity in exchange for the church giving us one of the 8 seminaries. By giving it to us, I mean that they would continue to help fund it, but that it would have an identity. And maybe it would be called the Seminary of the Stranger. SOS. But let it clearly stand for something alternative in the church. And this is where the radical people would be trained. And I think we would at least know that 1/8 of the people coming out of seminary would have some understanding of what it meant to talk about justice and spirituality together. I just don't think that's talked about much in the seminary. So I would envision a seminary that would have a mandatory year in a third world country or some third world setting in this country. I would see that seminary, along with teaching church history and Greek and New Testament studies and liturgics, would also teach economic analysis and train people to be more like John is in the book of Revelation.
I don't think you can get a job.
Critics of the culture. Well, speaking of John, this is where I think the Elizabeth Bettenhausens and the Barbara Lundblads and the Larry Rasmussens will teach. And the people who aren't currently at Lutheran seminaries, would you come?
I think my seminary is the closest one to what you're
doing. I think I would propose that pastors be paid differently than they are now, according to some other scale. I think it would be where openly gay and lesbian Lutherans would be trained and ordained. I just think it would be the place where justice-centered spirituality would be taught and people would know that. So that's my proposal. Give us a seminary.
Okay. Let's open it up, and you can feel free to respond to something they've all said or the question. Just try to be conscious of time. And go ahead, Deanne.
One of the questions that the manager would be last. Not to the last thing you heard. But I think Tom's proposal, no matter what you think of his politics, is an interesting one that comes out of it's timely in a merged church. Because the reason we have 8 seminaries, of course, is that each one of those used to have a much more intimate relationship with a church that was distinct from other churches in some way, which was partly ethnic and partly piety and partly theological emphasis.
And so I don't know that it could happen as dramatically as giving one over, but there is, I think that it's part of the change in the church once all this merging has happened. I talk to my students about this as, imagine if you moved house every year. That's what the ELCA has done for the last, the leading up to the ELCA, every generation of Lutherans have merged. And so we spent a lot of time rearranging our closets, because that's what you do when you move. But now we have to figure out what's the relationship between the people and our various institutions. It's not just seminaries that are in this crisis. But the funding is part of that, and the sense of accountability that some of you are talking about, how, what's my responsibility as a member of a congregation to, one, identify young people in my congregation who might be pastors, not only to identify them, but to help them develop their gifts as young people, to help them get the education that prepares them to go to seminary, to support them when they're in seminary. And then, what's my responsibility as a layperson to a pastor? No. Do I just say, oh, if, that's not the one I would have picked? I have to admit, I say that pretty often. But it's all of those relationships between communities of various scale and composition, and how we get leaders of various kinds. I'm an MA graduate of a seminary, you know, I went a different way. So I think Tom's proposal is a really fascinating way to make us think about other issues as well as about his proposal.
Yes. I'm a seminary student at Wartburg, just finished my Midler year. Second, third, fourth career, also a certified lay minister. So I kind of feel like I spread this group. I invite you to come to Wartburg, Tom, and see that we are being taught what you're talking about. But I disagree that we need one seminary to teach that. We need all of the seminaries to have an equal education. When I graduate and receive my call, I may be serving in a cluster or parish next door to someone from another seminary. And not that we want all of our gifts to be the same, but I like to think that we can at least discuss with one another on some sort of equal level. And right now, the seminaries are very different in their curriculums. We don't have an across-the-board curriculum that what I'm learning in my junior year or my Midler year or my senior year is not the same as what others at LSTC or Luther or Trinity or the other seminaries are doing. So I think it's really important that we do get a general education, but also have the opportunity to broaden it. And liberation, feminist theology, third world economics are being taught at Wartburg, and I'm very appreciative. It's opened my eyes tremendously. Also taught me more about what I don't know, what I'll have to keep learning. Thank you.
Just a question. What perpetuates 8 different seminaries?
The body in motion tends to remain in motion.
Well, I can.
Is it a historical? Is it a geographical thing? I know some of the history of it, but you know, with the struggle for economics and for the struggle with, you know, for students as well as in terms of keeping them. I know they're not all maxed in terms of enrollment.
No. In fact, we all struggle with enrollment. I would say, perhaps not Luther, but the others certainly do. Well, it's a complicated thing. It has to do partly with what Deanne raised. There was a study for theological education, and some of us wish that they had had the guts to shut down seminaries or move some forced mergers, whatever, but it would have been a really painful thing. Because you're dealing with alumni and constituencies, each one has a distinct ethnic constituency attached to it. It's very complicated. Even in Pennsylvania, there's been no success in getting the two Lutheran seminaries there merged. They're close to each other. And I can say, as one being in a seminary that is the product of a merger of five or six seminaries recently, depending on how you count it, that you lose some of your alumni loyalty every time you merge. So that's the complication. That's all to say, though, I wish that we didn't have eight seminaries. I think it's too many. I think many people in the church, I think it's part of our funding problem is that, if you view it like industry, it's like, why didn't you do more merger and consolidation and show us that you're serious about saving money? I think we've woken up to that, and that's why we now have clusters, and I think there is a serious attempt to economize and save money, but it looks like there will be eight seminaries.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't rush too much.
I think it's also, we're saying that there was a round of mergers of seminaries, so Sparks is LSTC is a merged seminary, Trinity in Columbus is a merger of three seminaries.
Luther is a merger.
So there has been some of that reorientation. The other thing this the Study for Theological Education did was to say, if there are going to be these eight seminaries, then each of those seminaries need to think about what they do, really along this sort of model that Tom is suggesting, although not so dramatically, to do specific kinds of work and to expand the scope of theological education in a way that isn't restricted to preparation for ordained ministry. So there has been a shift in that thinking, and you can see it at Luther, where when I was an MA student there in the late 70s, there were very few of us, and what is it up to now, about 20%?
Female?
No, MA students?
About 25 maybe.
Yeah. Whereas, in the 70s, you sort of have to apologize that you weren't going to be a pastor. What's wrong with you? Aren't you good enough? I said, I'm perfectly good enough. I just don't have a call. Leave me alone.
Oh, the other side of that, though, Deanne, was there were a lot of women there that said that they were MA students because they were so up against
the... That's also true.
Yeah, I mean, so there were a lot of people that finally switched. But.
There are two things that I would really like seminaries to do. One is to train people to be urban pastors. Mm-hmm. I'm from Chicago, and I see people, pastors all over our city, who don't know how to do urban ministry at all. And it's distressing, disappointing, and it wastes money and time, and it kills spirits, and it's just not good. And the second thing is, I hear newly minted, I don't know what these standards are you're talking about, but newly minted pastors, and I would say less so of older ones, who preach terrible sermons, terrible, just awful, just abomination. I mean, like, no structure, rambling and random thoughts about their personal lives. And I mean, I'm an English teacher. I just want to say to them, get a life. 3 points. One, two, three.
1 point.
No.
1 point.
1 point. Read the gospel, think about it, pray about it, figure out three or even one thing to say about it, and say something about the gospel. But don't tell me about your car phone. I mean, I just hear awful sermons. Regularly.
Yep. Okay. That's a specific request.
I would like to address this first point, if I might. I'm in my contextual ed congregation in St. Paul is St. Paul Ref, and a good friend who was also there for her contextual ed, a class member of Dave's, prepared herself very adequately for urban ministry. She did her contextual ed at St. Paul Ref. She went to an urban congregation in Los Angeles, a black congregation.
She prepared herself very rigorously for that kind of ministry. Would you like to guess where she is now?
On a farm in South Dakota.
Well, she's on the South Dakota-North Dakota border.
Mm-hmm. And why? How?
Well, you tell me. She was assigned to that region.
That synod?
Yes. Yeah, and it was not her request. I mean, she requested a different placement, and that is where she is.
That happens all the time in seminaries, is you request a specific area, and you get the opposite of what you request. And I think part of the thinking has to be that they want you to consider a discernment and to really look at what your calling is. But, for example, my internship, I asked for Seattle, which is a large metropolitan area, and I got Mendota, Illinois, which is a town of 7,100. I'm not disappointed in what I'm getting, because I'm very excited about going out on internship, but it just seems like such a dramatic difference. I asked for a town no less than 15,000, and I got a town of 7,100. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And then, again, when you graduate and you are doing your senior papers, you put down what kind of ministry you think you're called to, what you're interested in. I kind of understand it to be the bishop's kind of a NFL drafts type of thing. We want that person, I'll trade you that one for two of those, and next thing you know, who knows where you're going to get your call to.
I think that's really interesting, a couple of what you're saying, that what you're saying as well. I ended up in a rural town, 1,200, and northeastern Montana, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, having come from Phoenix, and I mean, my goodness sakes, I think one of the things that they do is that they try to put you in a place different from where you've grown up, to have some sort of a diversity, but at the same time, you know, you wonder, well, you know, I feel that I'm gifted in these areas, you know, can't you work with me on this, and you know, help me to grow in my gifts in this particular area. And it was interesting, while I was on internship, we had a couple people come out and talk to the parishioners about, you know, what are you looking for in pastors? And they said, oh, you know, somebody who can serve rural communities. So exactly what you're talking about, except rural communities. And so everybody in their particular context wants a pastor for their community. And then a pastor, like Jan says, trains for that, and then is sent somewhere else. So I think we need to begin to talk together and to work together and saying, instead of saying, well, I think that you would be best here and you would be best here. I don't think that there's enough listening going on in terms of that.
Go ahead. Coming from a congregation in a community of 4,500 people who's been in the internship program with Luther Sim for at least 10 years, and it could be 12, my concern when I hear this is that we're in southwestern Minnesota, we're not close to the metro area, and the problem we have is people don't want to come to us because in a two-income family, spouses don't have the economic or the job opportunities in our community. And so we're hearing this, you know, if it's just choice alone by an intern, we'd probably be sitting high and dry.
And that's a difference too. At Wartburg, we don't choose our site at all. We have one form where we can suggest where we would like to go. But the other seminaries, most of the other seminaries get three choices. The seminarians receive three choices and then discuss and are helped to determine which one of the three they're going to. We don't do that at Wartburg. So there, it's not an across-the-board type of assignment.
I think that's a misunderstanding.
No, it's not.
Well, if I can respond, one thing that I think we're about to change is that seminarians can't be expected to move as many times as they do with families. So we might need to look at fourth-year internships more. A setting like yours, I think, would be... you'd have an easier time getting interns if we didn't make the seminarians move for that third year and then come back to the seminary. That's a lot of moves for a family. And two career people, I can completely sympathize with the concern. We don't want to move away for a year and then come back. We might need to look at internships that are combined with first call kind of settings. And I think then if we are more flexible, you'll find that your congregation will be able to get interns.
And we've gotten the interns. It's just that, you know, when this process goes through, you know, there's the concern that the interns would prefer a metro area and end up getting a rural area. And many times they leave with a whole new insight. And so I think the goal has been met by assigning them there because they leave with a whole new insight of what rural ministry is about and wouldn't be their first choice. But
I was wondering how many people our church approves for ordained ministry, how many people that covers that leave, die, or retire, or, you know, are we filling all the positions, and what does that number, whatever it is, a lack or an abundance, what does that say about our common sense of call?
68% of the positions were filled at graduation. That was the percentage that they were talking about. Only 68% of the congregations who wanted to have preachers, new preachers, or wanted to needed preachers were able to get them. And so there seems to be a lack of individuals.
Yeah, that is true, but part of it is economic too. That a lot of parishes are empty that want pastors, but they also can't pay minimum salary guidelines. So there will need to be considerable consolidation of congregations as well to be able to support a full-time pastor, or else we're going to need to look at a lot of other options. So yes, right now there is a shortage, but most congregations that have the compensation package can get a pastor.
See, this new seminary I'm proposing, there were
yes.
equalization of pastor salaries.
This last year, I was told that out of all the 8 seminaries, there were 278 candidates, and there were over 370 positions open for ordained ministers.
How many were in your class?
120, 50% women and 50% men. It's the first time in history.
How many students of color?
90. I mean, you when you go there, when you do the
0 this year. It's a really pressing concern. We have to turn that around. It's been declining in the last several years.
What can I see then, Carol?
Out of this discussion, one thing that I hear is that maybe we need specialized seminaries, just as Tom proposed. I'm a dentist. I know that what we had in our education was we had 2 years of standardized, or more or less standardized education, because we had to pass a national board exam before we could continue in our education. Maybe that's what the seminaries need to do. First of all, have a formalized a couple years of their education, and then allow that seminarian to specialize or to move into another seminary that allows them to specialize in the kind of kind of ministry they want to serve. Not all of us are going to be educators. Not all the seminarians are going to be educators, but a certain number of them. Here as a spouse of a seminarian, I see this. I can see the ones that want to be educators. I see the ones that want to be administrators. I see the ones that are going to be the pastors. I see the ones that are going to be the rural pastors. I see the ones that are going to be the urban pastors. or, you know, any way that my conception that they're going to fit into those. Is that what we need to do with our seminaries then? Have one that's for the urban ministry, one for the rural ministry, one for the for those that want to go on and get their PhDs and become the educators. I don't know, that's something that I hear from this group. I think that that's what they're saying.
Okay, I'm going to give the 10-minute warning, so if you're sitting on a thought and haven't run enough, you know we've got 10 more minutes. Go ahead.
I was going to say something about the alternative Rocha Seminary, which is run out of PLTS LA. I mean, that's not a Berkeley, and it's in LA. It's the specialty there is to try to get seminary students who are people of color and who will probably go back into this, probably the cities, and be pastors within the city. I've been a mentor for, first of all, a black woman who is now almost ready for call, and now I'm the mentor for a black man who is also second career. I mean, he's a supervisor at Home Depot and is trying to learn on the side. The way I look at that alternative route is that it's a great idea. There are some really good things that are happening within it. It has some problems because one of the things is that other pastors are very protective of their status and they want that they want these other people to jump through all the hoops that they did. So they try to say, well, you haven't taken Greek, so therefore you don't count, or so there's a little jealousy going on there. But for the most part, I think these folks are they're older to begin with. They have taken on responsibilities and family, and they want to do this, and they're doing a double job. They're still out there working, and they're trying to get through the academics so that they can learn to think theologically and learn to preach, and learn to be in a context that is probably not something that everyone that comes out of my seminary, Luther, or some here. A place that we necessarily want to go or will be successful at going. So I think there are some experiments going on, and some of those are good. They just needs to have some funding, and it needs to have some more creative ideas bubbling around, because I think this is really important for the church.
Go ahead.
I have supervised interns for the last 12 years. I've supervised about 12 students from the seminary. And with the exception of one, every one of them I would be very happy to have as my own pastor. They've all came from Luther Seminary. I'm sure the other seminaries are doing well too, but I am convinced that the seminary is doing an excellent job of bringing excellent people into the ministry. And by the way, my pet peeve is calling ministry a career. It's not a career, it's a vocation, it's a calling. And we need pastors who are willing to serve in small congregations in rural areas, because the vast majority of congregations in the ELCA are small rural congregations. And there needs to be a sense in which we are called to that ministry and not just wanting to serve where we want to serve.
And your setting is in what?
I am in a sub-rural setting. I'm in Ellsworth, Wisconsin, which is about less than an hour away from the Twin Cities. The seminary regards us as a metro site because the spouses of our interns commute to the Twin Cities to work, but we just have had excellent candidates. And many of them now are second or third vocation people, and they come to us with such great life experience and maturity, and having done other things first. I don't think I've had a candidate under 30 years old for several years now.
Okay. Great. Glad to hear that, Olson. Go ahead.
Once you've completed the gathering of vocabulary, you have an understanding of the basic tenets of what it is to be a pastor. Once you've done your internship, once you've wrestled with the various questions that you have to wrestle with, that seminaries are good at wrestling with, and figuring out political positions and economic positions, regardless of whether you're in an urban setting or a rural setting, you still need to go into a parish And I think most pastors have to learn, coming out of seminary, that the parish is going to be more formative on them than the other way around. That everyone has to take that vocabulary and learn how to be emotionally, physically, and spiritually present to the people that are there. That nothing happens unless first you deal with the centrality of your existence together, which is worship on a weekly basis, the centrality of that message. And then second, that you are there and are able to be appropriate. And that's why pastors, even more and more now, have to be extremely eclectic, have to be appropriate with the aged, have to be appropriate with very young people, have to be appropriate with their own conduct, have to be appropriate with the responsibility for continuing their education, have to be appropriate with being able to communicate and to be empathetic and compassionate and also confrontative, and not think that they're going to, you know, be leading the parish, but embarking on a journey together to see what's going to happen. And the setting that you find yourself in, the combination of settings, is going to largely inform you rather than the other way around. It's just that we take this vocabulary and have a system that hangs together, and we gently lead each other in one way or another toward a common goal that leads into a million different directions. But if the clergy do not have that ability from the get-go, which the seminary primarily prepares them for, which is the centrality of worship and the presentation of the central message, then we go nowhere. As long as we have that commonality, then we can begin to explore the options that we can lead to together.
Yes. What is the approximate cost for seminary now?
Well, our tuition at my school is not the highest. We're at about $4,800 per year, and some of the other seminaries are higher. But when you put together all the costs associated with room and board and books and health insurance, which they have to pay, it can easily go up around $12,000 a year or whatever. So that students come out with great debt too, and they're not going into high paying positions when they go, which I should say more than $12,000 a year. It can easily be $20,000 a year. So we need congregations to help students with their tuition, and we need creative funding kind of things so that they won't be burdened.
Because most
in the back. Oops, he had his hand up. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say something to Ian about the call and the graduate's choice in the call. I think is vital and should be considered even more in that process. I understand you should be open to where God is going to call you to do the service, but yet at the same time, if it's a place your family is not accustomed to, I just don't think you can be effective if it's a setting where you'll be uncomfortable or feel threatened or just unhappy. I think that needs to be taken in consideration. Although you also need to be careful that that's not abuse too, that they just go somewhere because that's where they want to be. Still think their choice needs to be taken a little more seriously. I've had a lot of friends. We have one good friend who chose to go back into school for further a degree rather than taking the placement he had been given right out of seminary because personal reasons.
In front and then Bob.
I just add on to that most seminarians come out of seminary not just with seminary debt, but with college debt.
Still paying.
Sometimes do the math. Add up the number of hours that a person has in church, in Sunday school, in youth groups. Add all of that up through their, and add to it the years of education in college that have been specifically related to religious subjects, and then add the quote 4 years of seminary training. My bet is you will not have quite yet the number of hours spent in a high school or through a high school education. we're expecting the individuals to come out of seminary with a very high degree of competence. And we really have not had a lot of hours of education to produce the competence. That's one of my concerns. The second concern that I end up having is that we've talked a lot here about the individual and the individual sense of call or the individual's choice of where to serve. We've not talked a lot about the congregation and the church's responsibility to choose and select the people they want to start encouraging to consider call into parish ministry and nurture them from a relatively younger age. And that's a responsibility that I think the church has. And I think that it's a responsibility that is that has been accepted in some settings and has been able to been tracked in terms of what results have happened. There are some congregations who I think have done an excellent job of doing that, and they have produced an abnormal number of seminary candidates in comparison to the rest of the church.
Are there people representing other denominations, other traditions here? We've had a pretty Lutheran focus in critiquing, and I invited Episcopalian priest, but she's a single mom and didn't think she could get a babysitter. Is there anybody else who would want to speak to a different model? Or?
Just Missouri Synod.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what you got, that other Lutheran or other denomination. Or
well, Dan's. Where? Do you have anything you want to contribute? Or?
I had the privilege of hearing one of our new seminary presidents speak, and I thought it was really quite good in terms of the realization for what needs to be done in our synod seminaries. Though our problems are a little different, maybe not so different. The complaints that we get are the gentlemen graduating from the seminaries know everything and are, you know, tend to be pretty legalistic and know it all and are not. We have the same problem how they can become servants and learn from the congregations that are imposing their will on the congregation and those kind of things. But I think there's some insights into how that needs to be done. Too many theologians, not enough pastors. Too many cowboys, not enough shepherds. That's the stuff we hear.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I have a friend in who's through St. Louis Missouri Synod Seminary has the possibility of being placed in a congregation in South Minneapolis, which would be a 6-year on-site seminary program where he would take fewer classes but would be in the parish for 6 years and then would be ordained after those 6 years, just be less coursework, which is something new they're trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good to hear about the experiments and the ideas. I'm going to officially end the forum and just know these people, some of them are here for a few more weeks or days at least, and now that they've identified themselves on this issue, you'll see them at coffee break and other places, and you can continue the discussion either with them or amongst yourself. I think good comments, and I think it shows that we all have an interest and care about this a great deal.